Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. After 6 hours of planned debate and a moment of silence called for by Ohio Republican Representative Bill Johnson, the full House voted in favor of two articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The ayes have it.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi defended the vote, saying this.
December 18th. A great day for the Constitution of the United States. A sad one for America that the president's reckless activities necessitated us, our having to introduce articles of impeachment.
Then moments later, Pelosi, a Democrat from California, declined to say when or even if Democrats will deliver the articles to the Senate. Meanwhile, the president, the third ever to be impeached, continued to deny wrongdoing at a rally for his reelection in Battle Creek, Michigan.
It doesn't really feel like we're being impeached. The country is doing better than ever before. We did nothing wrong. We did nothing wrong. And we have tremendous support in the Republican Party like we've never had before.
We're talking national politics today with political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. Welcome back, Ken.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
Good. It's the second impeachment I remember 21 years ago. Bill Clinton was impeached as well, almost to the day. But a lot different this time around, no?
It is. You know, I mean, of course, I remember as well. I remember the Nixon impeachment. Of course, he resigned in 1974 before the full House could vote. But of course, the House Judiciary Committee voted to impeach President Nixon. So as somebody who remembers Nixon and Clinton, they are and now, of course, Trump, they are all different. And this one, I mean, it just seems like there's no you have a president who doesn't feel he's done anything wrong. There's no contrition. There's no apologies. There's no regret, it seems. And it seems like the country is just split right down the middle.
How much of a difference does it make that it's before an election rather than after an election?
Well, that's the difference, of course. You know, of course, Andrew Johnson was never elected.
Right.
He became president after Lincoln was assassinated. But both Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton were reelected in landslide. This one is coming at a time when the president himself is seeking reelection. And, of course, there was a lot of argument from almost every Republican and not just a few Democrats who said that maybe impeachment is not the way to go. Let the voters have their say, which they will next November. But other Democrats led by Nancy Pelosi said, and Adam Schiff said this as well, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, he said, we can't risk, even though the president is not going to be removed by the Senate, we need to go on record by saying that we cannot risk the president trying to steal another election by reaching out to foreign powers to help him get reelected. If you buy the argument that Russia helped Trump in 2016 and maybe doing so again in 2020, and the argument by Schiff and Pelosi and others saying that the president needs to be told that such activities are just wrong.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking national politics, of course, the impeachment today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you want to weigh in on this issue, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The 6 hour debate yesterday before the vote seemed like more of the same of what's been going on for the last 3 months to the untrained ear. Did anything stand out to you?
Well, I mean, there were some emotional speeches. I thought that, you know, Steny Hoyer, the House Majority Leader, the Democrat from Maryland, was very emotional. Steve Scalise, the Republican whip from Louisiana, was very emotional. But you know something, you're saying that it's kind of the stuff we've been hearing for the last 3 months. It really has been kind of the stuff we've been hearing for the last 3 years, in that the argument for and against Donald Trump's activities and behavior, and of course, there's far more that Donald Trump has done that is not part of the impeachment articles, like the money to Stormy Daniels and the enrichment of his own family, and these are allegations that have been going on, for those 3 years. And it just as emotional as this debate has been, and as emotional as the whole thing has been since Nancy Pelosi called for the impeachment inquiry, I'm still wondering what changed in the country. And that's the remarkable part, because President Trump's numbers have not changed. Mm-hmm. The support or opposition to impeachment have not changed. So for all the arguments and the impassioned debate, I don't know if we're any further along than we were 3 months ago or 3 years ago.
That's a point that the Republicans have made repeatedly, is that the Democrats have been trying to impeach Trump since the day he was elected. And it's true that there were lots of Democrats, not Nancy Pelosi, not until this issue, the Ukrainian issue, but that were calling for his impeachment for this or that. Do you think they did themselves harm politically by going after him so soon over anything?
Well, that's a great question. And of course, we won't know that until November of 2020. Right. And you can make the argument that, you know, this is not unprecedented. Mitch McConnell said from the moment Barack Obama was elected that I want to make him a one-term, do everything I can to make him a one-term president.
Right.
So there was opposition and there was obstinance in both political parties whenever the president is of the opposite party. But I mean, in fairness to the Democrats, it seems like Nancy Pelosi would have rather had anything happen other than being forced into an impeachment vote, because she knows that many of her members, many of her Democratic colleagues, many of whom were elected in pro-Trump districts in 2018, many of them are now in jeopardy. And I think they are in jeopardy for voting to impeach only two Democrats, one from Minnesota, one from New Jersey, voted against impeachment. And then another one from Maine, voted yes on one article and no on the other. And that was it for the Democrats.
Right.
But there are a lot of Democrats who voted yes to impeach in Oklahoma, in South Carolina, in these districts where Trump is very, very popular, that who have put their political, you know, futures on the line. But this was an act in many ways, a profiles in courage, whether what's more important, your political future or the future of the country. And I think that's why so many Democrats did vote to impeach.
What's the deal with Tulsi Gabbard out of Hawaii?
Well, you know, something, I mean, it's interesting. It's sad for her that she's not going to be in tonight's debate, but she voted present on both. She is, she's very anti-war and anti, foreign entanglements, and of course was a big Bernie Sanders supporter 4 years ago. And now as she's running for president, she's on Fox News all the time and has said some nice things about Trump all the time. And so she voted present on both articles of impeachment. And she says, well, you know, that's the way you have to be. But I mean, if nothing else, it's drawing attention to herself.
Right. The Senate leader and Republican Mitch McConnell has already said there's no chance his chamber will remove Trump. And he said that he's working closely with the White House in planning the trial in the Senate. What do you make of Pelosi's announcement that she would wait to send the articles of impeachment to the Senate until she knows more about the planned procedure?
Well, a lot of people reacted very harshly to what McConnell said about that. This is a political process. This is not a legal process. I am not impartial. Now, of course, for example, Susan Collins, the Republican senator from Maine, who's up for re-election this year, she said, I'm not going to talk about impeachment because I need to stay impartial. Whereas so many of the chyrons on cable news say, you know, the Republicans have made up their minds already. Well, to be honest, the Democrats have made up their minds as well. But, I mean, Nancy Pelosi is looking for some kind of leverage. One would think that now that the House has finished its constitutional duty, that she would just send the two articles of impeachment to the Senate. But because that the Democrats feel that they're not getting any kind of a fair shake from McConnell and the Republican-controlled Senate, Pelosi is, I think, very cleverly holding up on sending those articles, holding up on naming impeachment managers, you know, the House Democrats,
right,
who will argue for impeachment before the Senate, as we saw with the Clinton impeachment. And, you know, there were some Republicans who were very upset. Lindsey Graham said it is a disgrace. But basically, she's looking for some kind of leverage. And hopefully for her and the Democrats, that any kind of, some kind of a sit down between McConnell and Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate, will then lead to a Pelosi ultimately sending the articles to the Senate. But she wants to make sure that the Democrats get a fair deal before she does that.
I was listening to Nina Totenberg's report today on what happened 21 years ago and how the Democrats and the Republicans negotiated, I guess, Trent Lott in the Senate and the Democrat
Tom Daschle,
and how they managed it. And it seemed like it was very collegial.
It was, and when you think of it, I mean, there were a bunch of senators from both sides who were just torn on it and voted, you know, left their parties. But there is no budging at all from the Republicans. Not a single Republican in the House, including so many of those Republicans who have criticized Trump over the last couple of months, if not a couple of years,
and including some who are leaving office and don't have anything to lose.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking of. Francis Rooney of Florida and Will Hurd of Texas.
Yeah.
Francis Rooney said that one day he said, I'm open to impeachment. And then immediately all the radio stations in his district went ballistic, saying that you're a traitor, you're a Judas and things like that. And the next day he said, I'm not running for re-election. But even not running for re-election, he didn't wanted to risk the wrath of the Republican and maybe perhaps the president's tweets, and they all voted with the president.
What do you get about these comparisons, these sort of religious comparisons? Someone called...
Jesus?
Pardon me?
To Jesus Christ?
Yeah, to Jesus Christ, and, you know, Representative Nadler is Pontius Pilate, and is that typical?
No.
I try to remember back 21 years ago. It just doesn't seem normal.
No,
what is normal?
No, I'm sure that when a lot of people saw what Bill Clinton was doing, they probably said, "Jesus Christ, I can't believe he's doing that." But I mean, I should not take the name of Jesus Christ in vain. Shall we say? But having said that, it was pretty remarkable. There was this one congressman, I think from Georgia, who just compared the president with Jesus, and this has gone. It's almost like a cult sometimes. We're hearing the way we're talking about our leaders, especially in this day and age. It's not what we've heard before. And I don't know. I mean, of course, you know, the beginning of religion and politics started in the late, for the most part, started in the late 70s, early 80s. With the moral majority and things like that, and of course Jimmy Carter was a born again Christian, which we didn't have in the White House before that.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, it seems to have reached a completely different level with some of the admiration and lack of admiration for the current president.
We're talking national politics today, which, of course, includes the impeachment of President Donald Trump yesterday. My guest is Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll continue our conversation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking national politics today, and that means mostly one thing, the impeachment of President Trump, which took place yesterday after 6 hours of debate between Democrats and Republicans in the House.
The president is the smoking gun.
Let me be clear. This is nothing more than a political hit job.
President Trump will continue to abuse his office and obstruct Congress if left unchecked.
Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process.
I said that a dark cloud was descending upon this body. And today, because of the clock and the calendar, it is closing.
That, of course, was a montage of Democrats and Republicans speaking in the House yesterday before the vote. Still with us is political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just to review, the president was impeached on two articles, one for abusing his power by withholding an Oval Office meeting and military aid from Ukraine in exchange for investigations that would benefit him politically, and the second one for obstructing Congress's ensuing investigation by blocking his top aides from testifying or giving over documents. Ken Rudin, one thing that really struck me as different from 21 years ago is the demonstrations on Wednesday in about 600-plus cities across the country. And the reporting I saw credited MoveOn.org for organizing them. Do you remember anything like that 21 years ago?
I don't. I do. It's funny. I do remember rallies regarding Nixon. I remember people were, there were bumper stickers everywhere, honk if you think he's guilty, and they were holding up those signs and everything. I do remember anti-Nixon demonstrations in 74. I don't remember one side or the other about Clinton. I mean, first of all, unlike Nixon and certainly unlike Trump, Clinton was a popular president who we all know why he was impeached. I mean, he was lying. He did lie under oath.
Right.
And of course, it was about, but it was also about personal, it was about sex and extramarital relationship was his kind of hardly bending the Constitution, or maybe it is. But the point is, I don't remember the emotion in the country other than just disgust at the president's personal conduct. Like I do now, and certainly with Nixon. Can I just say one more thing, though?
Sure.
What's interesting about the risks about the Democrats in the House who did vote to impeach, they voted knowing that he's not going to be removed from office. So, in other words, it's not that what they were doing was to basically ferret out justice and then get him to be removed. They know the Senate is not going to remove him, and
right.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, you need 20 Republicans to vote to convict him in the Senate. If you get two Republicans, I think there would be a lot. And the only ones people are mentioning are Mitt Romney and Susan Collins, and there's no guarantee how they'll vote either. So the Democrats are voting knowing that Trump won't be removed, and they're doing it on principle. But once again, as I said, they are risking their political future on this principle.
Let's see, Charlotte in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Charlotte.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. The question in the back of my mind is any of this impeachment theater, pro or con, that we've been watching these past months, doing anything to motivate approximately 60% of the American public that does not deign to vote? We are coming up on the 2020 census as well as the election. This would be a good time to get rid of gerrymandering, if at all possible, in any state. I know that we passed a constitutional amendment in Ohio to forbid gerrymandering. I'm wondering if this is doing anything to motivate the apathetic American majority.
Hmm. Ken Rudin?
Well, I kind of think it does, but I think that's true on both sides. I think both the pro and anti-impeachment crowd are pointing to impeachment as a motivation for saying that every vote counts. I mean, obviously, the Republicans wouldn't be in this position had the Democrats not won control of the House in 2018. So they're motivated. And of course, as we saw, as Ann mentioned, all the rallies we've seen in the last few days around the country, it seems like the left, or at least the pro-impeachment crowd, is motivated as well. So I think there is truth to that. And of course, there's a very good point about gerrymandering. Not only did Ohio passed their amendment, but other states like North Carolina and elsewhere, the court and Pennsylvania. The courts have come in and forced the state legislatures to redraw the map, which, since 2010, when the Republicans took over many, many state legislatures, they redrew the lines that, like, for example, in North Carolina, even though the state is probably 50-50, right now it's 10 Republican congressmen and 3 Democratic congressmen, and that's all part of gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the country is ready for radical changes on it, but certain state courts are, and you're seeing it happen in a few states.
Thanks, Charlotte. Let's see. Brian in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Brian.
Hey there. I just had a question about where they went with impeachment, or I guess the premise. I was surprised that after the Mueller report and all the effort that was put into that, that Democrats didn't pick that up and go with that. In fact, it seemed like Mueller even kind of left it out there. Hey, now it's your job, Congress, to do what you will with it. With the Clinton impeachment, we had the Kenneth Starr report. It just seemed like, you know, it seems ridiculous to open another can of worms with the Ukrainian issue. What is your opinion on that, on why they went with Ukraine versus Bob Mueller's report? And I'll listen for your response off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, Brian, that's a very good question. And there are a lot of Democrats who said, well, why not? And you're absolutely right. Robert Mueller basically ended his report by saying, this is what we're offering. Now, Congress, you should run, take the ball and run with it. But they didn't. They didn't feel there was enough. And they also, Nancy Pelosi was still trying to avoid impeachment at all costs, because they just knew about all these vulnerable Democratic seats. But when the whistleblower came forward and we heard about a clear quid pro quo about you know, withholding aid unless the Ukraine opened up these investigations into Joe and Hunter Biden, and you're not going to get any aid until you do that, that was just too much for them, and they had no choice. I agree with you. There are so many things, I mean, that the Democrats, on paper at least, could have pushed for impeachment. Remember, with Richard Nixon, and especially with Bill Clinton as well, there were a lot of articles of impeachment that didn't succeed, that even Democrats voted against. And even in the House Judiciary Committee with Nixon, a lot of them didn't pass as well. So they just seemed to be very satisfied with the Ukrainian situation, and the Republicans said, really, you're going to remove the president for Ukraine, and that's what you're working on, you're basing it on? And I think there are a lot of Democrats who say we could have done more too, but I think the feeling was that Pelosi wanted to protect some of her more vulnerable members.
Well, we have two callers, one that thinks that the impeachment will hurt Democrats, another one that thinks it won't. We'll take that one first from Susan in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My point is that the Republicans have been saying all along that the Democrats have been wanting to get rid of Trump from day one and or even before. And so when these new Democrats got voted in, the Republicans were saying that anyway. So I think this should be no news for those voters that because they already knew the Democrats wanted to get rid of Donald Trump. So I don't think it'll hurt him at all.
What do you think, Ken Rudin?
Well, I don't think the Democrats who were running for in 2018, and maybe a lot of them were elected because of anti-Trump sentiment, but I don't think that they certainly didn't run on, I'm coming to Congress so I can impeach the president. I think they were coming in because they cared about health care and you know, rising health care costs and guns and things like that they promised to work on. So I don't think they were really their constituents expected them to vote on impeachment because for the longest time, the Democratic leaders, led by Pelosi, said that this is not on the table. So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think the Democrats had much of a choice. It's not that Pelosi instructed them how to vote, but I think they felt that, you know, there's principle there, and there seems to be clear example. I mean, if you listen to all the witnesses, my goodness, for the Republicans not to have heard, I mean, they keep quoting Jonathan Turley, the guy who said that impeachment wasn't warranted. But if you listen to everybody else, the former ambassadors, the former career public servants, civil servants who testified before in the impeachment inquiry, it seemed clear, at least to these Democratic members of the House, that something was awry and something was impeachable, and that's how the vote came about. But initially, I don't think they came to Congress saying, I'm going to vote to impeach the president.
Susan, thanks for that call. Now, our next caller, Evan in Hilliard, thinks it will hurt Democrats. Evan, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey there. It already has hurt the Democrats. There's numerous polls out there that in swing states that the Democrats are losing hard off of this. I think since impeachment began, Trump's already up 6 approval point ratings or something like that. So it already has hurt him. I mean, that's set stone. But furthermore, I mean, this is kind of funny because Trump's an egomaniac and they voted to impeach him. He now joins 1 in 3 presidents. I mean, wow, what a feather in his cap. And then he's going to be the first president to be impeached and then be reelected. He's going to be happy about that, man.
All right, a lot of stuff there to unpack. But first of all, I have not seen the same polls that Evan's seeing. I see that,
no, I haven't either.
That Trump is holding his own with
right.
at about 42%, and among Republicans, the numbers haven't changed much.
No, and as regarding the polls wanting Trump impeached and removed from office, that hasn't changed either. That's pretty close, 50-50. As far as Evan's prediction that Trump gets reelected, I mean, that certainly could happen, mm-hmm. but as I've said so many times, if we couldn't predict on the day of the election in 2016 what was going to happen between Trump and Hillary Clinton, I'm not going to risk, you know, 11 months away from the election saying what's going to happen. But in fairness, the Democrats at some point are going to have somebody who could beat the president. And oh, let me just say one more thing about polls, because actually there is something in what Evan said is true. There were a lot of polls that showed Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and others defeating the president. And some more recent polls, at least in some states like Ohio and Iowa and Michigan swing states, showing that the president coming back, if not pretty even, moving ahead of some of these Democrats. So Democrats know they're going to have to come up with a candidate who could beat them. And unless the Democrats eat themselves alive, it's going to be a very hard-fought race. I would not come close to making a prediction at this point, but
yeah.
It's going to be an amazing, and I don't mean amazing in a good way, kind of election.
Bob in Cincinnati, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for letting me on.
Sure.
Yeah, given that Mitch McConnell refused to allow hearings on President Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court until after Obama left office, is there a possibility that Speaker Pelosi could withhold sending over the impeachment case to the Senate until after the November election?
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well... Wow. Sure. Yeah. I mean, sure. I think I'm not sure if the Democrats still want to have impeachment hanging over the election, but yeah, that's certainly possible. And of course, my understanding is that the Senate would have to act once the articles came from the House to the Senate. So even if they did it, even if it's a post-election decision. Well, I don't know. Wow, that is something. that's food for thought, I'll tell you that right now.
Well, it surprised people when she said yesterday they weren't going to immediately send over the articles of impeachment to the Senate.
I thought that was a good move, given the fact that she's trying to get some kind of concessions from Mitch McConnell, who doesn't look like he's ready to give any kind of concessions just yet. But holding it off, holding it off until then, my goodness, that's...
Yeah.
There'd have to be a reason for it. I mean, and I don't know if – I'm not sure if the American people would support it, but it certainly could not be ruled out. Wow, that's a great thought.
Interesting. Bob, thanks for that food for thought issue. Let's see. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just had an opinion question about what you thought about the possibility. There's a lot of, like, right-wing fringe groups that are heavily armed that are – saying that if Trump is removed, which I don't think he will be, but if when he loses the 2020 election, that they're going to rise up and start a civil war. It's kind of big on social media and kind of worrying. Like, what do you think about that?
I've thought about that a lot. I actually thought of that after the 2016 election, that there was a lot of murmurs on social media that if Trump loses to Hillary Clinton, it would be because it's fixed and we're not going to take it quietly. I think that no matter what happens, I mean, you know, we could blame Donald Trump for all the ills in the world. But obviously, you know, as Bob mentioned earlier, the Merrick Garland holdup came well before Donald Trump was elected
right.
president. So there is a growing intolerance for democratic ideals that do worry me terribly. And I think that no matter what happens,
Democratic
November,
with a small d, not
small d.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's right,
yep.
small
yep.
d, exactly. And I just think that. You know, people say, well, you know, everything will be settled by November 2020. I don't think so. And especially if Donald Trump loses, I think there are a lot of people who just will not accept that. And I'm not pointing the finger on every Republican or every pro-Trump voter, but there is a disturbing element out there that I just don't think that may not accept an election result. Look, that sounds like a Lyndon LaRouche conspiracy theory, and I don't mean to just, you know, fester that kind of thought, but it has come to mind, and it does concern me.
We are talking national politics today with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment, we're going to talk more impeachment, but I also want to move on to the Democratic presidential primary debate tonight in Los Angeles. So if you have any questions or comments about that, too, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking national politics today with political journalist and host of the Political Junkie podcast, Ken Rudin. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And remember that you can hear the debate, the Democratic presidential primary debate tonight, on 89.7, and you can also watch it on WOSU television. So check those out for that later on tonight. Ken Rudin, just a few more impeachment questions. Senator McConnell has said that they won't have any witnesses. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has said he wants to call Trump's top aides who avoided testifying in the House impeachment proceedings. Someone said to me last night they were very frustrated that every time Republicans brought up how unbalanced the hearings were in the House, why the Democrats didn't come back and repeatedly remind people that they had sought more balance in the hearings with the likes of Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton and that sort of a thing. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. I thought, you know, every time the Republicans said the president we weren't able to make our case, and basically the Democrats should have said over and over again, although they did say it a bunch of times.
They did say it a bunch of times, but there didn't seem to be the same parody.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. What about Mick Mulvaney? What about John Bolton? What about Mike Pompeo? What about Mike Pence? But then again, every time the Democrats talked about that, the Republicans say, "I want to hear from Hunter Biden," and it would have been a charade and a circus. But the fact is, I mean, you talk about abuse, you know, obstruction of Congress. Everybody that the Democrats tried to get from the administration, they were blocked by either the Secretary of State or the President himself. Those who did testify did so against the wishes of the administration. So you know, my hat's off to them for having the courage, but so much of it was blocked up. So, you know, if we didn't get all the story, the reason we didn't get all the story is because they didn't look. They just didn't want the truth to come out. So, yep.
Let's see. Mary in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mary.
Yes. It just floors me the extent that Trump insists that he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. And it's deeply disturbing. And it's deeply disturbing that the Republicans back his not knowing the difference between right and wrong. It boggles my mind.
Ken Rudin?
Yeah, I'm glad Mary said this, because this is what I've been thinking about for the longest time. It's not that the president doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. It's just that if you go back to his days as a businessman, I mean, this is the way he's always operated. He'll just do it to the things that benefit himself and you know, other things, other people who were involved in any kind of calculation with the president, you know, they be damned. But it's the Republicans. That's the thing that startles me the most, that there's almost like a cult-like following among the Republicans, that if they dare speak ill or even question the president, either the president will start tweeting or a challenger will come up in the next primary or social media would explode over it. So whatever you think about, you know, the subservient Republicans in Congress, the base is even more insistent that you just don't question what the president is doing. And, you know, you think of how beloved in many ways Ronald Reagan was in the Republican Party. But, you know, he had his members of the Senate who would vote against him if they thought it was wrong. Nobody dares do that today. And I don't think I remember ever seeing that. Even when FDR had complete control of the government during the 1930s and 40s, there were a lot of Southern Democrats who just regularly opposed him. As a matter of fact, he tried to knock them out in the primaries. But that's not happening with Trump at all. I've never seen that before.
Thank you, Mary. Let's see. Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Ann and Ken, I appreciate this conversation.
Ann, I'm sorry I have to interrupt you, but you're muffled.
Is this better?
Much.
Okay, I apologize.
No problem.
I appreciate your broad view, Ken Rudin, and your wisdom on all things political. And, you know, considering you're welcome. The people actually voted more for Hillary. And it was the Electoral College that put this president in his role. And if it were not for the Electoral College, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But my question for you, Ken Rudin, is how will the Electoral College play out in the next election and in the future? And is there anything we can do about that?
Ken?
Well, one, there's nothing you could do about it. And, of course, it's interesting that two of the last three presidents were elected with a minority, or at least with a fewer votes than their Democratic opponents. Both George W. Bush and Donald Trump had fewer votes than their opponents, but because of the Electoral College. But this has told us is that most of the country doesn't count. The only states that count are states like Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Florida, and that's it. So, you know, you could have all these rallies. Like somebody sent me a picture of this big anti-Trump rally, pro-impeachment rally yesterday in Portland, Oregon. And that's great, but Portland, Oregon, we know how that state is going to go. We know how California and New York are going to go, and we know how Texas is going to go. But because of the Electoral College, because the way this election is designed, it will happen in these states. And that's exactly why Donald Trump was in Battle Creek, Michigan yesterday, and he was in Pennsylvania the week before that. There are only four or five states that anybody cares about, and that's where – and while the Democrats are eating their own, and we'll probably see more of that tonight in the debate, mm-hmm. Trump is because he's basically unchallenged for renomination, he'll go to those states and whoop up the crowds. And that's the way our election is. And I don't see any change of it because you'll need a constitutional amendment to get rid of the Electoral College. And these smaller states, the Wisconsins and the Iowas and the Nevadas and the New Hampshires, they're not going to give up their power because otherwise nobody would ever go there and campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see it changing anytime soon.
And
it's interesting. It's interesting how the Republicans will always say, you know, we're disenfranchising the 63 million people who voted for Donald Trump. But I don't know why the Democrats don't say, what about the 66 million or 68 million people who voted against Donald Trump?
But, well, I suppose they don't want it to. I mean, I've been thinking about that, too. But I think that'd be kind of playing into his hands if they make it about that.
That's true.
Because they're always saying they don't think it was a legitimate election. And that's another thing. Another thing that's coming out of all this lately in the last month or so is the you hate Trump. I mean, it kind of seemed to start with that reporter,
yeah.
I think from The Hill, who said to Nancy Pelosi, why do you hate Trump? And she walked right back to the podium and gave him a piece of her mind. But where did that is that one of these talking points things?
Well, of course, the reporter who asked that is a former Fox News reporter who left because of sexual harassment allegations and now works for Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which is also very conservative. So, but that is part of the Republican talking points, that they hate Trump, that they want him impeached. And good for Nancy Pelosi saying, I don't hate anybody. That's part of the talking points, that it's just a personal thing. They just don't like the fact that you know, he was elected and they're doing everything they can to get him out of office. And, of course, that's just, you know.
In other words, it's personal. And personal.
Right.
Yeah. Let's see. Dale in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Nick, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I've admired every single show I've heard that you're on with Ann. You're always wonderful. But
thank you so much.
My point that I've listened to the impeachment. It's been quiet here. I work by myself. I've had the radio on. I've heard almost all of it. And both sides continually reference, quote unquote, the American people, as though we're unified and we have one opinion. And at the same time, both sides acknowledge that we couldn't be more divided. And so it seems to me the continual use of that phrase by both sides is just indicative of a cynicism that I can't even comprehend. It's obvious that there's no such thing as an opinion held by the American people.
It's an interesting point, and I've noticed that, too. What do you think, Ken?
Of course, look, we've had civil wars, and we've had civil rights battles, and we've had Vietnam War, but I don't remember the country split down the middle this much as it is now. It's just ugly, too. It's us against them, and you're absolutely right. It's not the American people. It's my people on both sides. It's my people when we're talking about the American people. And before we go, though, we only have about 6 minutes left to talk about the debate, the Democrats in the debate. I'm sorry. I don't mean to run your show.
No, but I want to talk about them, too. We have 7 candidates, 5 white guys and 2 white women. What was once the most diverse field ever has shrunk. Obviously, we knew it would, but also paled.
Well, yes, but I mean, don't blame the system for getting rid of Kamala Harris, because she qualified for the debate. It was her decision
right.
to get out. Now, she wasn't moving in the polls, and she wasn't raising money, and she wasn't, you know, she wasn't becoming a factor. But she could have been there. And of course, the only person of color is Andrew Yang, which is kind of interesting, because I mean, who's
True.
Andrew Yang? But yeah, I know that is something we did talk about, the diversity and the excitement and you know, that's gone. But there still remains a battle in the Democratic Party of, well, what are you looking for? Are you looking for somebody who can beat Trump, or are you looking for somebody who can satisfy you ideologically,
mm-hmm.
or hopefully somebody who could do both? And that's what this is, debate number 6 tonight. And while the field is much less and smaller than it was, these candidates are still going to try to make that argument. I mean, I'm going to miss Cory Booker and Julian Castro and you know, the candidates who know, and Kamala Harris, the people who have made the debates pretty much. I mean, they played a huge role in helping us learn who these candidates are, but that's the system the Democrats came up with, and that's what we have to live with for now. Anyway,
Republicans obviously have been pushing the narrative about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden in the hearings, the impeachment hearings, over the last several weeks. Does this play a role in the debates tonight or going forward?
You know, I would have thought that with Joe Biden being under attack by both his fellow Democrats, remember in the beginning, the first debate, he was attacked by Kamala Harris about being, you know, palsy with segregationist senators and opposition to school busing, as well as being attacked by the Republicans on the Hill and the president for sleepy Joe Biden and what Hunter Biden. I mean, Matt Gaetz, the Republican from Florida, talking about Hunter Biden's crack cocaine habit. I mean, it was a despicable bit of just ugliness that it's rarely seen. But having said that, Biden has an opportunity in the debates to make a difference. I thought he's been disastrous in every single debate, that he loses his train of thought, he confuses things, and he just runs out of time, and he seems to be just almost like Admiral Stockdale, remember Ross Perot's running mate, who am I, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
That feels sometimes like Joe Biden, and he's not taking advantage, one would think he would have, for being the object of attacks by both fellow Democrats and Trump.
Who do you think has the most to lose tonight?
Well, you know, I mean, everybody seems to be a target. Biden was the first target. Then when Elizabeth Warren seemed to move up quickly in the polls, and she did, she was leading in a lot of states, she became the target. Now it seems to be Pete Buttigieg. And even though Joe Biden is the national, ostensible national front runner, it really is about Iowa, because if whatever happens in Iowa will definitely influence New Hampshire 8 days later, and then, of course, Nevada, South Carolina, and then Super Tuesday states. So forget about what's going on nationally, even though Joe Biden has a clear lead nationally, especially with African-American voters. I mean, African-American voters, even with Kamala Harris in the race, even with Cory Booker in the race, Biden seems to have the loyal support of black voters because, you know, he was the loyal vice president to Barack Obama. But Buttigieg has the lead in Iowa, and he's starting to, you know, differentiate himself from the other candidates. He's been picking on Elizabeth Warren for how are you going to pay for this Medicare for All stuff. He's picked on Joe Biden as far as, I guess, a new generation, you know, a new generation of leaders and things like that. And there are a lot of people who feel, wait a second, who is this guy? He was elected twice in South Bend, Indiana, for goodness sakes. What the heck is that as far as, and he's 37 years old, and he has no experience. And we know the danger of electing somebody president who has no experience. So there may be a concerted effort to get on to Buttigieg, and with a smaller field, it may be more effective. But I don't know. He's the only guy who shows upward movement among the candidates. Maybe Bernie Sanders too. And it's funny about Bernie Sanders. You know, he's 116 years old. He had a heart attack. He's not 116 years old, but he's 78.
To make a point.
He's 78 years old, and yet he's vibrant. He's still getting tons of endorsements. I wouldn't discount him either. It's just fascinating to watch.
You know, what about the enthusiasm for watching the primary tonight? Are people getting a little weary, you think?
Well, I'm sure they are, but I'm not, because I learn something every, you know, if we can't give 3 hours a month to find out who the Democrats are going to pick, I mean, I'd love to see a Republican debate as well, but there are people who say enough is enough, and you know, you have a lot of debates coming up, I think even more regularly than once a month in 2020. So by then maybe people will just have enough already, but it's also crazy to think of, maybe there must be 10 or so candidates, Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris and Steve Bullock and all these people who have dropped out of the Tim Ryan from Ohio, all these candidates who have dropped out of the race, and not one vote has been cast yet. I mean, in the past, you know, if you do poorly in Iowa, New Hampshire, or elsewhere, you're gone. But now they're not even surviving that long. So something's wrong somewhere. I just don't know what it is.
Well, I will talk to you in a few weeks about it, okay?
I think that's fine.
All right. Ken Rudin will be back with us in a couple weeks. We have a busy election season ahead, and he's going to be joining us a couple times a month for the time being. So we appreciate him for that. Ken Rudin, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, and I love being on your show.
Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.